This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 20th of April, 1963. The title of this lecture is Basic Purpose. This tape is 74 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I hope you haven't gotten too wet. I hope you haven't gotten too wet. I'll try to dry you out now by putting your attention on some energy masses that will develop heat. I'd like to talk to you something about goals. Tell you something about goals and so forth. Because this is your easiest entrance point. As far as cases and interest is concerned, everybody has a goal. Now, when you say a goal, that's the way it registers with people. They have a goal. They want to get their goal. You hear this. You hear this. I would like to get my goal. So forth. I used to say it myself. Thirteen banks later, you see, it becomes rather obvious. It becomes rather obvious that a person has a great many more than one basic purpose. Now, basic purpose is not something, a goal is not something that is new in Dianetic Scientology by a long ways. Not at all. You'll find it mentioned in Dianetics Modern Science and Mental Health, Book 1. Talks about every person has basic purpose, and this is a monitoring factor as far as his life is concerned, and so on. Well, this is what makes the difference amongst people. This is the thing that makes the difference, completely aside from the fact that Thetans are not different castes or classes or something like that, but they do have their own inclinations, quite individuated or individual as far as purposes are concerned. Now, if they weren't different as beings originally, it's my contention that they would not take quite as many divergent paths and postulate quite as many different basic purposes. This fellow wants to catfish, and that fellow wants to be a tiger, and this girl over here never wants to be shot, and this sort of thing, different, 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 different. And a person's basic purposes that he postulates and that you find him with are monitored by different tastes and different experience and so forth. But we're off in a never-never land that at this stage we cannot talk about as to what makes one Thetan different than another Thetan before he starts living and before he has any experience. That is not an area we can at this time discuss. We can discuss this one. We can discuss this one. A person who has the basic purpose to be a motorman naturally has an entirely different experiential track than somebody who has a basic purpose to catch catfish. You can see this fellow on the bank of the river now, you know, and he's lying there with a fish pole, and his experiential line doesn't include, let us say, banking, and doesn't include war and so forth. But this other fellow, to be a motorman, well, you try to get him out on a fishing expedition. And what fish, you know? What drives them, he'll start saying, you know? Now, this is quite remarkable in that these two people, because they had divergent purposes, have lived through entirely different experiential tracks, which has given them an entirely different experiential pattern. Now, difference of experiential pattern comes about. Two people can walk down the street together, And because they are slightly apart, they see slightly different views of the same objects. Therefore, their experiences walking down the street are different. Now, you take a person who walks down the street of a modern city consistently and a person who walks over the Sussex countryside consistently, we can see that their experiential track is widely different. And we exchange position, and the fellow who walks through the streets all the days of his life, dodging scooters and taxi cabs and that sort of thing, we get him down here, and he goes to try, starts to go to sleep at night, and he can't. His ears hurt, you know, it's too quiet. And he takes a walk outside, and there's sort of an absence of anything. It isn't that we've made things unfamiliar for him. He doesn't know what dangers lurk. But he feels it probably dangerous. Now, there's no more cruel thing than to send somebody away on a 2 or 3 week vacation who is a busy, busy person living in a big city, you know, and we send him down to the seacoast. And he sits down on the seacoast, and it's all different. Well, he has no experience with seacoast. Let us say he doesn't, you know, just going on regular vacations gives you an experiential track. But those waves coming in, you know, the waves coming in, and he listens to these things. He lies there all night long listening to these waves coming in, you know. And he gets back, and actually he has an apartment that's just above a bus terminal, you know. And he gets back and he lies down in his bed, and how nice it is, you know, to lie here in nice, quiet, peaceful London. You know, crash, bang, thud, you know. It's what, partially, what he's familiar with. But there's another point to it. What purpose does a person have that makes him live in London? What purpose does a person have that makes him live in the country? What purpose does a person have who would live on the seacoast? These are all different. Now, this is your bonus. This is your bonus in clearing. Once you have cleared a person of his basic purpose, he can now perform it. Until then, he can't. Why? I've told you many, many times that the only crime you can really commit is to deny yourself. That call yourself a liar and say you're wrong. That is the basic crime that a being can commit. He can say, I have been wrong, and look at this. And he can do things which are an overt against himself. This is the fundamental. Of course, he does things that are overts against others, too. And it's those things he apparently suffers from. But in actual fact, it is because he goes against his own basic purpose. He sits down and he says, all right, now, I've had a very tough time of it. And this way and that, and things haven't worked out just right. And in this next few trillennia, I am going to catch catfish. Now that, I can trust myself to do that. And I can lie on the riverbank. And so that seems very nice to me. That's very good. And I'm going to catch catfish. Now he gets very adept at this as years go on. He gets better and better. And the years go on. He gets better and better. And he finally can say to himself that he is a catfish catcher. He really catch catfish. That's about the middle of the bank, you know. He just looks at a river and the fish just leap out of the river, you know. And however, he has made a fight of it. And he has imperceptibly closed terminals consistently with the enemy. Well, there's game wardens. There's the people who don't think that you ought to catch catfish. There's the preservation of fish society. There's the baleful look that a catfish gives you when you skin him, you know? And there's all sorts of various actions which are extremely detrimental to his goal to catch catfish. So about the time he becomes a catfish catcher, why, he has to admit that there are enemies to this goal, he says, you see. And he goes on, and from that point on, for the last half of the duration of this basic purpose, the individual turns against the purpose to catch catfish, and we eventually find him not only someone who would never catch catfish, that's not quite the top, you see. It is just no catfish catching. There just isn't any. He has no reality on it at all. As a matter of fact, before he gets to that stage, of course, he has joined the society to prevent the catching of catfish. And sooner or later, he will form a society to prevent the catch of catfish. He has turned against his basic purpose. Now, that is the state the basic purpose you're going to find in PC is in. It is always an expended purpose. Once in a while, you are lucky enough to get the actual, absolute, top goal. And if you find it, it will have advanced a greater or lesser distance into the present. In other words, the first goal that the PC is actually living is usually not found by the auditor the first crack. Isn't that interesting? Instead of that, he'll find the second, or he'll find the third, something like this, because it's easier to find that one. And you go ahead and run it. The PC's perfectly happy with it. He says it's his purpose. But there's still a lot of mass around, and when he runs these things, pains, you know, and keep going through his neck. He's not quite happy about this whole thing. And you realize that when you've run this bank, you've got to go the other way. You've got to go toward present time now and find a later basic purpose, and sometimes once more a later basic purpose. And it's more difficult to find where that ends, but that is all in the business of auditing. Now, what I'm talking about, however, is you're going to find, as the first basic purpose on the individual, a basic purpose that he has turned against, and that is all wrapped up, is gone, expended, he has nothing more to do with it. But let's look at this. Let's look at this from the standpoint of experience. This person was at one time an expert. He was a real expert catfish catcher. He was a wizard. And man, all you got to do now is show him the label on a can that has the picture of one whisker of a catfish on it, and he just goes, whoa. These are allergies, by the way, and other things of that sort come under this same heading, you see. And that's all you got to show him. Well, now, after you've audited him, what happens? Does he become unable? No. The odd part of it is, for the first time, he'll be able to perform that basic purpose. He can catch catfish or leave them alone. He is able to exert a power of choice now over his own actions with regard to that basic purpose. Let's take the poor fellow who wants to play a piano. You see, he has a basic purpose to play a piano. It'd probably be expressed some other way, like to be a musician, you see. Play a piano. And this poor guy is forced every now and then to take music lessons. Something happens in life, and he comes near a piano. And he can't read music. And he gets his fingers caught and breaks his fingernails, you know, on the keys. And he keeps getting his foot caught down here in the midst of the pedals. And all kinds of wild things happen every time he comes near a piano. Well, he goes over and sits down at the piano and just starts to play the piano. And his arms get tired, you know, the guitar, and they start hurting. Start hurting way up here. Can't quite understand what's happening. And the next day, he comes down with sinusitis. He knows what this is attributable. Medical science has already determined that it is a virus. So he comes down with this virus called a piano. And and there he is. There he is. He's going to be sick and so forth. Of course, he'll still kind of monkey with it. He can't quite get away from it. He can't quite have nothing to do with it. You got a hold of him. You audit him. You find this girl to play a piano. You finish the thing out. Now, the funny part of it is he can now play a piano or not play a piano. But here's a test of it. In general ability alone, auditing out a basic purpose results in an increase in ability in all lines. You get that one? Just not just playing a piano. You audit that out. You've unfixated him to a degree where he is now more skilled and more able generally. You see, because his tension isn't fixed. Now, if you audit out to be a motorman out of somebody who is trying to play piano, you will find out that as you run out his basic purpose to be a motorman, he will learn how to play piano better. You understand? So there's that general gain. That, by the way, is the most observable gain. This individual is now more able generally because attention is fixated. But let's talk about the specific basic purpose now. Let's supposing this poor guy is trying to play a piano and he's got a goal to play a piano, which is run out. And the top of it is no piano playing, you see? That's finished. And he gets allergies when he comes near a piano and all these various things. We run that out, and this is the specific gain that you get. All of a sudden, he walks over and sits down to the piano, you see, and he can play a piano. He never played piano before. But now he can suddenly play a piano. In other words, he is now capable of executing his skills on his experiential line, don't you see? Let's get this poor fellow who has a goal to be a general. And then, of course, any one of these modern armies would accept him. And he has this goal to be a general, and he's got to be a general, and, they eventually elect him president of the United States, you know, I mean, something like that. And he's got this goal, and there he is, and by golly, he can't be a general. He'll do something weird every time. He's always kind of sickly. He doesn't quite make it on any line. And here he is with this goal. Auditor comes along. They find the basic purpose to be a general. They audit out for the first time the fellow could be a general. You see, there's the trick. After the individual has postulated, has made his basic purpose stick with himself, he then is committed along a fixed line against which he eventually turns. And he can no longer do what he decided to do. It's like New Year's resolutions. There's nothing as dead as a New Year's resolution in September. Well, you know it yourself. You can't even remember. This is only April. So here is the crux of the situation is after the individual has lived, he should have the ability to live. But because he's made basic postulates and turned against them, he then lives less. By the ordinary action, the more you associated with this universe, the more you associated with life, the better you would be able to fare in life. Now that is in the cards. We know that. An auditor can take somebody out here, just ordinary processing. He takes somebody out here that can't pass a driver's test. Every time he goes down, why, the police say, you again, you know, and take his shillings, you know, because they have to live, or they think they do, and gets another permit, you know, a test. He goes through this thing, and he flunks again. He keeps turning U-turns where he should do right turns, you know, and you can always tell these fellows that are going to fail. The fellow that rides with him, you know, steps out and looks scared, you know. Well, you take this fellow, and you don't have to. This was the way the world used to go. You know, Swami, you will now, you know, hypnotize him. You know. You will now be able to pass your driver's test. You remember the scandal he'd had down here in Brighton? Somebody was hypnotizing people so they could pass their driver's test. I don't know if you remember that or not, but you actually can implant a suggestion in somebody that you can. It'll last for quite a while, right up to the first wreck. Anyway. And any auditor can take this individual that can't pass this examination and just get him to familiarize himself with a car. Not to the degree of going around and driving the car, but just reach and withdraw from the fenders. Well, lots of us have done this. Just reach and withdraw from the fenders. Reach and withdraw from the bonnet. Reach and withdraw from the windscreen. Reach and withdraw. Reach and withdraw. Turn the key on and off. Turn it on and off. Turn it on and off. And the next doggone thing, you know, individual sort of goes wog, and something hits him, and he looks at this, and gee, gets in the car and he can drive it. Have you ever seen this or a shadow of this phenomenon occur? It's a common phenomenon, all right, to us in Scientology. It probably looked like a miracle in the world of science. I love that world of science. Anyway, here's this familiarization. Now, we know in auditing that if you familiarize somebody with something, he can then accomplish it. Unless there's some deep-seated, engramic, reliable item or something that's kicking his head off, you won't be able to do it. All right. But we know, then, that familiarization results in tolerance. That is, in the ordinary course of existence. Well, the reactive mind, by fixation on purpose, brings about a reduction of experience. This motorman would go on strike if anybody asked him to be a conductor. And some of them have recently. And in the United States, the railroads are all going broke because the unions have it all fixed up that every diesel locomotive has to have a coal passer. Coal passer just rides to Chicago, New York, you never just tap a word. Seems funny. They could find something for this fella to do. But he's fixated on this purpose, and oddly enough, will never become familiar with a diesel locomotive, and one fine day the law will slip or something like that and no longer hold this, what they call feather bedding in, and this individual has not familiarized himself with railroading. He's got a fixed action. He's always in a fixed state with regard to his immediate environment. And where you have a basic purpose, you have somebody in a fixed state. Have you ever tried to talk to somebody who had some sort of social problem and had him answer you at the end of an hour or two's dissertation on your part, you know? You just, logic coming out, you just absolutely beautiful. If you just could have had a tape of it, you see, you could have found out how brilliant you were in arguing with him on this point. Have you ever had such a conference? All right. And at the end of that time, find this bird twice as convinced of his first opinion. That's what he's got to do. Well, of course, you're not going up against now familiarization or reason or anything of the sort. You're going up against fixation. Now, fixation will deliver into somebody's hands a great deal of experience. No doubt about that. This girl has a goal to dance, and boy, she's been dancing in here and there, and you get back to the temples of Nineveh, and she was dancing back there, and there isn't anything she doesn't know about dancing, except now she walks like this, so she can't, see? Well, you take this girl, she's got a terrific track on the subject of dancing, and you clear of this purpose to dance. It takes the fixation off, which prevents the familiarization. And when you take that fixation off, then the individual can function. And the first thing you know, boy, can she dance. There isn't anything she doesn't know about dancing. In other words, you've cashed in at once about the experiential track, and there it is. So, let us put it this way. You've been living for quite a while, whether you're aware of it or not. You have been living quite a while, and you're about to cash in. You're about to cash in. The only way you can actually cash in is to free your attention from the failures of the cycles of these past basic purposes. But everybody has a basic purpose. Now, it's very funny that they all admit they have a basic purpose, and we'll discuss this with you, and we'll look for it, and we'll be audited on it, and we'll do everything under the sun about the subject of a basic purpose. You never mentioned to them that this basic purpose may have been going on, you see, for a very, very long time. You never have to tell them anything about this. Well, that's quite interesting, isn't it? As a matter of fact, even in the U.S., I've seen some newspaper stories devoted to Scientology, very friendly ones, on the subject of everybody has a basic purpose. That's quite interesting. I mean, that's an open door. Everybody has a basic purpose. What's yours, you know? And people get quite engrossed with this because their attention, of course, is fixated in that particular direction, but they're very interested in it. Why? Because they've got a tremendous experiential track along that line, and anybody who has had one and departed from it wishes he could have it again. What he wants is the experience that went along with it. What he wants is the memory of all the adventures he's had along that line. And yet he doesn't have those anymore. They're so closed out, he doesn't even remember his basic purpose, which is a very gruesome joke and very grim. Well, right here, what happens that an individual can't remember everything he's ever been and done and can't remember his basic purpose? Why not? It's the instantaneous character of the reactive mind. Everything in the reactive mind is monitored by instantaneousness. Everything is instantaneous. Time is actually the single source of human aberration. And this instantaneousness reflects itself in the fact that when you find your first, I'm talking about you, when you as an auditor find your first RI on a PC, or you as a pre-clear, if I have your first RI found on you, it'll look like it's right now. It always has that sensation with it. It's always right now. And you find an earlier one and an earlier one, and each one is right now. And you find an earlier basic purpose, and it's right now, too. And you find an earlier basic purpose, and it's all right now. In other words, instantaneousness. Time has ceased to exist. Time has ceased to exist. Time has closed out. The individual no longer conceives of time spans on this subject. He only conceives of instantaneousness. In other words, time has perished. And so, each individual is carrying around this terrific instantaneousness of things he was doing Lord knows when. And he thinks of these things as an instantaneous occurrence. And because of this character, he can then only spot those things which he himself has been definitely connected with over a period of time, such as he has lived in this house, in this body, for 10 years. So therefore, he has that much track. And his current lifetime will have memory connected with it. But everyone agrees that nobody has lived before. Not because they are mean, not because they're trying to get even with each other. It's because before doesn't exist. Only now exists, you see? And when they try to think before this life, they run straight into the instantaneous character of the reactive bank. So there isn't anything there. There is a knownness of yesterday. It doesn't exist. It's all instantaneous. These things you can experience. There's nothing much to this. But it's rather fantastic when a PC suddenly looks up and he's been going along with you, you know, he's going running along, he doesn't know anything about the past or anything. So he's running along, he's been running out reliable items out of the bank, and he's running out his basic purpose, and he's been going at it and so forth. This is very, very peculiar. You say, what's peculiar? Well, I could get the idea. I saw a few days ago a picture of the French Revolution and somebody beheading somebody. I don't quite take this. To take what? Well, it seems like this is trillions of years ago in some space society, or it's on some planet, someplace else, or... Gee, whose memory am I running? Oh, that's the answer, yes. Somebody else's mind. Yes, yes. I must be running somebody else's mind. This is prompted by the fact that all of these identities are other identities than the one he has. Now, his instantaneous characteristic is eventually discharged, and now he has time. You get most people, you know, they think that they can't remember back of 5 years or something. If the psychologist had made a thorough examination of this situation, that is, he'd have found quite differently that a person is incapable, the ordinary person on the street, of remembering past the age of 12 or 11, something. It's quite late. It's quite late. They have some spotty memory somebody else has told them about. And they'll quote these to you as their actual early track in this lifetime. So actually, not even this lifetime is a total memory span. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised when the memory span closes down back of this lifetime. Now, that which you've seen as time track on a PC, which did lead back into past lives, is outside this reactive bank and these items and identities. That's what you call free track. And you can run a person up and down this free track. But every once in a while, he's got this airplane in some earlier life or whatever it is, and he's every once in a while, this airplane is okay, but the left wing is black. Well, get away from that if you're just running free track, because he's seen the borderline where this incident impinges upon the goals problem masses in the bank, which are black masses. So you can run a person on free track and do quite a bit with this. But the track they have actually lived arduously on their own basic purposes is not there. It's just not there. It's just one big black scrunch. Totally instantaneous. So, of course, nobody's ever lived before, because that's instantaneously, and there's nothing there. Don't you see? That's the state man is in. He is not living the life he thinks he is living. Now, you go about the business as an auditor of finding the basic purpose of an individual, and you'll find him just as happy as can be. And I have an announcement for you auditors about the most therapeutic, best, grooved-in, acceptable auditing a PC can have is contained in the activities under the heading of, quote, trying to find a goal, unquote. Now, because you'll be straining so hard to find the PC's goal, you miss this fact that the most rewarding processing the PC can receive is the effort to find a goal. I think that's quite interesting. Because, of course, it's liable to be missed. The auditor misses it, the PC misses it. Both of them are sitting there saying, I wonder what my goal is. I wonder what your goal is, don't you say? And they're working away to get this goal, and they're working at it, and they're working at it, and they're working at it, and they're working at it. Now, if the auditor doesn't know this fact, he gets the PC all stirred up all the time about an anxiety of not having the PC's goal. He gets the PC all anxious on the subject of, well, what's your goal? I've been auditing you now for 50 hours, and we haven't got any goal yet. Now, put your goal down on the list, you know. And he harasses the PC. Or the PC's starting to get worried because, well, they've gone this far, and they haven't found the PC's goal. In actual fact, the PC is not up to confronting his goal. There's an element of luck and an element of confront in it. And he hasn't put the goal down on the list. And the moment when the PC puts the goal down on the list is in the lap of the gods. It is not a predeterminable moment. Now, there are lots of tricks by which you can find PC's goals. Find them very rapidly, all this sort of thing. But what do we mean very rapidly? You find a PC's goal as soon as the PC puts his goal down on a goals list. And you won't find the PC's goal any sooner than that. Which you've got to have his goal to find. Now, therefore, goals finding is totally determined on the basis of how long is it going to be before the person puts his goal on the list. That's how long it takes to find a goal given good auditing. His goal will be found as soon as he puts it on the list. An auditor finding goals uses an ARC break to establish having gone past the PC's goal. Because you go over and pass the PC's goal, and he'll explode. He won't tell you you've missed his goal. He'll just be very upset with you and very upset with the world at large. And you go back a few goals, page or two, and there's his goal sitting there, and you didn't give it enough attention. It rocket red, and it did this, and it did that. But you said, well, we'll get to that next week sometime, and so forth. And bow! He doesn't even know what's going on. You don't know what hit you as an auditor. This perfectly sweet piece, it's always been so propitiative, you know. All of a sudden starts telling you all the mean, vicious, nasty things that you have done. They never say, you've missed my goal or anything like that. It's you who were the villain. And you go back and you look at it and you find the goal sitting there on the list. You've gone over it. But anyway, you can't find the PC's goal that is ready to be found until the PC puts it on the list. Now, there are goals that are common to every PC. And unfortunately, so far as I know, these goals are too far back and too heavy to be run. The goal to create is common to everybody. It's an early track goal. It sits back around, well, of course, it varies from person to person, but it sits back around 216 trillion years. When you run that thing, it's just like, I don't know, eat dinner with burning fused dynamite on the middle of the table, you know. It's dangerous. The PC will live through it even if you did that. You can find goals that are common to every case, but I repeat, they are too early on the track and too strong and too far from the PC's reality to even read as goals. He can put these goals on the track, and you can read them to the PC, but they won't read. Now, Washington had a fad going. Every once in a while, an organization would get a fad going on a favorite goal. And Washington had the goal to be. Some of the PCs they were running to be on, you know, they were looking awful creaky. That's way back. That's a tough goal. See? That's tough. We'll look at the simple character of it. Whether you think a simple-minded spirit flying around the universe, all of a sudden he says, well, the solution to all my problems, I'm going to say now that I'm going to be. That is it. You can see where the goal would sit on the track. You try to run such a goal and you're in trouble. So although there are goals in common to all PCs, that is not a good method of finding the PC's goal. Now, the later the goal is, the closer it is to now, why, the more complicated the goal is. The more complex it is, and the more finite. And you're going to find some funny goals. You're going to find some goals that you wouldn't think would be the PC's goal. We used to have this opinion. Wreck cars. Cars, lifetime. Yet you're liable to find such a goal. Near they are to PT, and near they are to present time, the more complex they are, and the more definitive, and the more defensive. They're the goals of a person who has had it. You know? To have nothing to do with men. See? To leave. To have no money. Good survival goals, you know? Now, those goals are the goals that are nearer present time. And the closer you can find that goal to present time eventually, why, the better off you'll be. But here's the strange part of it all. The closer it is to present time, the probability is, the harder it will be to find. So you take the goal you can find that is offered by the PC. You don't try to force goals off on a PC. At least at this stage of processing. You don't try to force goals off on a PC. You wait till the PC puts it on the list, and you give him proper questions, and you use what we had here, 212, to find items, and you list goals against that. These are all fast methods of finding goals. There are all kinds of rapid ways of doing it. There are phrases like, the best phrase of them all is, tell me the most anti-survival goal you can think of. You get a nice list of that, and very often the PC puts it right down on the list. Bang. then he gets to thinking about it. And when you null that little list, you read that goal, it doesn't go out. And he said, oh, that scares me to death. That's my goal. Now, there are questions of this character that you can get the PC to list on, that very often deliver it. But sometimes the PC will not put his goal on the list, no matter what questions you use, list after list, item after item, and so forth. You're liable not to get the PC's goal on a list until he has listed as many as 5,000 goals. We have one actually on record. But on that one, no trick questions were used. That PC was just listing. 5,000 goals up the line, the PC put the goal on the list. Another case, 3,000 goals. And on that case, some of the goals were gotten by trick questions, but the first 1,500 of them, I think, or something like that, weren't. Maybe the first 1,000 of them weren't. Just didn't put a goal on the list. Well, now these trick questions, you can get it on the list faster. And this opens up a whole thing, and again, we are lucky. Taking goals from a PC and listing them and taking a meter and reading them against on the meter and marking them in or out and eliminating them and bringing them down, and now I'm talking about a short goals list. Goals you should list in short lists. Don't list long goals lists now. List short lists. A couple of pages. Just till a question you're asking no longer reads when you ask it of the PC. It no longer ticks on the meter. Just a couple of pages. You null those things down. Call each one 3 times. Mark it in or out. You know, it's whether or not it disturbs the needle of the meter. Call it 3 times. You'll find that you have 3 or 4 goals left in. Call these 3 or 4 goals. You have a couple left in. Now, take those 2, or take the 4, and put in what you call the left-hand buttons. These are suppress, careful of, and fail to reveal. Put those in on the goals you have left. We didn't find goals easier because we didn't have those secret buttons. It takes those 3 buttons to make a goal rocket read. We would have seen rocket reads years ago if we'd had those buttons. But you put those 3 buttons in, and the goal either stays in or goes out. And then you've got 1 goal left in, and now put in the kitchen sink on the thing. Put everything in. You don't have to put 18 buttons. You can put in 8 buttons or something like that. Your big midwood buttons, what they call. And that goal is going to produce, ordinarily, fireworks. It's not the PC's goal. But it's a cousin. And it is something the PC's attention is fixated on. You're liable to get all kinds of action from this. And the PC begins to feel terrific, you know, about life and that sort of thing. Well, you familiarize the PC with a goal. Now, you should get 1 of these goals for every list you do. There should be 1 active goal for every list you do. It's these little short lists. You just sit down and make a list of goals, a couple of pages long. You take a meter and read those back to the PC and mark the ones in or out and then put in your rudiments, buttons, and so forth on what you've got left. You should get a blowdown, the TA rise, the charge comes off the case, the PC cognizes, feels fine, everything's fine. And you should get such a reaction as that just about every list you do. Now, if you find a dead list that doesn't give you a very hot goal, let that go by. But if you've done a couple of lists that don't give you hot goals, beware. What has happened now is the PC's attention has been stuck on one of these early track goals. We call it a favorite goal. What goal did you really think it was? Oh, I thought it was the goal to create. Oh. Yes, all right. You thought it was that goal. That's fine. You do another type of list. You write down on that list, what goal would you postulate after the goal to create? Or after, pardon me. After to create had failed. And you just do a little 2-page list of that till the question no longer reads when you call it on the meter. What goal would you postulate after the goal or after to create had failed? And he'll give you a list, and that takes his attention off of that goal that can't be run. Moves his attention up the track toward present time. You can start getting heavy action and reaction from your PC. You start getting these hot goals, and the PC feels fine. You just keep this up. Now, there's only one thing wrong with this as a process. It's probably the most wonderful processing you can give a PC, irrespective of finding the PC's the goals. There's only one thing wrong with it, is you eventually find the goal. Now what do you do? Well, it's all up now. Found the PC's goal. Can't run him on the routine two processes anymore. There he is. He's at it. We've got his goal. Every time you say it, Rocket reads. Every time you try to come off of it or do anything else with it or take him someplace else on routine two, the ARC breaks. There he is. I mean, we got his goal. What are you going to do? Well, actually, of course, by reasons of classification and training and that sort of thing, you can't start your routine 3G on him and find items and that sort of thing. You're going to wrap yourself and the PC around the telegraph pole. And that's what's the trouble with this goals-finding process. Everybody will listen to it. Everybody will run it. And you should run it on PCs. But the trouble with it is, it finally winds up with finding the PC's goal, and then it lands you in a spot where you haven't been trained. And you say, well, what about this? How serious is this? How serious is this? How thoroughly do I have to go into this? Well, I would say, offhand, that nobody is, and you know down deep in your heart, I'm the last one that ever stopped you auditing on anything on anybody, you know. You know that. Sooner or later, you're going to find the goal. You're going to be sitting there rocket reading. There you are. You've got it. Well, where was that bulletin on routine 3M2? Let's see. Is it the PC there? Now, where's this pattern of the bank? I think we have to find the top upturn. That's what I heard, the top upturn. Now, that the top upturn is always the goal to catch catfish. That's what that is. Or no, I don't know. I've lost the bulletin. Joe borrowed it. I think that's right. I think it's the goal to do something or other. Well, the only difficulty, the only buddy that's going to be uncomfortable in this situation is the PC. How do you put this PC on ice while you go get trained? You're going to do this. You're going to do this, some of you. It's perfectly all right. We'll do everything we can to help you. I know very well that you won't do anything else. But routine 3M holds with it its most violent guarantee of being followed. You do it wrong, it has its own self-disciplinary majors. You can't mess up somebody's bank. The bank is absolutely impervious to being messed up. You can find items in it. You can shoot it around. You can turn it upside down. PC says he's dying, that you've killed him, and so forth. You haven't. Somebody on proper routine 3M2 can go right back to that bank, no matter how badly it was run or mauled or anything else, and put it all back together again. Maybe there's a couple items discharged at the top or something like that. It's going to be very hard on somebody. And worry is the occupational disease of clearing. I have never, there's a couple of auditors here I could look at, that I have never known to worry. PC could lie in the middle of the floor screaming at high C, and they would just never have worried. PC practically on his deathbed, and the auditor never would have worried. Both of these auditors have worried like mad, so they didn't sleep at night while running 3M2. It's a worrying process. Were you right? Were you wrong? Is this the way you run it? How do you do it? Wow. And that's why I've had to take some awful fast shortcuts in researching it. It's because there's such a demand for the knowledge. I mean, it isn't anything that you can just say, well, we'll do that next year. People have got PCs still sitting in the auditing chair. They haven't gone home yet, you see. Waiting for me to do some research. Now, the best way to get clear is actually to get trained as an auditor. Odd, isn't it? Get trained up in very modern techniques as an auditor. This isn't any sales talk for training. I'm just giving you truth. I myself would rather hate to be run to OT without being a well-trained auditor. I'd hate to have that happen to me. I'd be too much of the effect of the line. Some various other things would occur. About the best way to get clear is to become a good auditor. Now, that's the best way. Now, the next best way to become clear is to get it done by somebody who is very well trained indeed. Now, those are very rapid methods of getting clear. Your next method of getting clear is to take somebody who doesn't quite know how, with you not well trained on it, and dub through somehow. People are going to make it at that level. There'll be arms and legs missing and so forth, but they'll still make it at that level. We always have that kind of auditing. And the other is the co-audit line, where you have very heavily supervised auditing, very expert supervision over a few PCs and so on, who are quite amateurish, but they are being steered very closely through. Routine 3M2, by the way, does lend itself to this process. It's actually easier to clear them if you're a clearing auditor. In a co-audit group, it is easier to clear them than it is to find their goals, because that requires a little more skill. You could steer these people through. They're not going to do anything wrong that will land them in any kind of trouble if you're checking all the way through, because now you're running on a preconceived pattern. If they haven't found an item that did this, this, and this, gave a rocket read, and blew the tone arm down, if they didn't find such an item, it's not it. This thing lends itself to this type of processing, providing the person who is doing the supervision is expert and is experienced along this line. So there's another method. And then there's another method. There's another method of getting clear on this, and that is at a slightly lower echelon, and that is a couple of guys get a hold of a couple of books and some bulletins, and they read them very hard, and they start doing it on each other. I suppose at Hazy London, they will be getting calls from such people quite periodically. The PC is wrapped all around the chandelier, and the other fellow can't do anything about it. I would say that's a very insecure method of going about it. I would say that was a rather poor one. But nevertheless, it will occur, because such things have occurred. Now, there's some new attributes for clearing. There's new clearing processes. A lot of you have had 212 items, and a lot of you, by the way, have found on PCs and have had found on yourselves various items of one kind and another. You know, anything that somebody could run a process on at any time in the development of Scientology. You see what I mean by an item? Anything, see? Person said, well, the trouble with you is your mother, we're going to run OW on your mother. You get the idea? All right, so that's a mother. That's an item. Now, any one of those things that have ever been found, you should carefully collect either on your PC or on yourself. You should carefully collect them. Because this is one of the routine 2G processes, and it's quite valuable. I think it's 2G3. And this process requires that you list goals against these items. And those items, the earlier they are, the more reliable they are to find goals with. Interesting. Well, you found two things out here today. You found two things out here today. You found that all of your auditing hasn't been wasted. It's still valuable, and very likely some item that was found on you and Lord knows when, by whom, if you say, what would be the goal of whatever the item was, you take a 2-3-page list till the question no longer reads, of that will very possibly have your goal right on it. Those are all valuable, those old items. The earlier they are, the more valuable they were. It didn't matter whether they were proven, checked out, proven to be reliable items or anything else. Just use all of them. And the other thing is that you've been clearing people for years. You have been clearing people for years. You've been clearing them of problems. You've been clearing them this way and clearing them that way. You haven't understood clearing so much in that definition. But wait till you take a raw meat PC who has ever had anything run on, doesn't even know how to sit in the chair and doesn't know which end in the middle of the bank is, and try to run raw clearing on this PC, you will thank the Lord that you have had some auditing. Now, you yourself in auditing, whatever auditing you've done, has been very successful, far more successful than anything else being done on the planet, even in its crudest stages. We're not at this time abandoning everything we know about auditing. Don't get that idea. Don't get that idea. And I'm not in any way discrediting anything you've ever done for cases. Don't get that idea either. We just made a brand spanking new breakthrough here that is a highly skilled activity and so forth. I want you to know that it exists. Now, I greatly appreciate the work which auditors here have done. You've done people a lot of good. They very often have said you didn't when you did. They instinctively knew that up along the line someplace, there was an open sesame to freedom, to total non-aberration. They sniffed this out as beings. And when you weren't able to give that totally to them, they tended to be a little bit nattery on the subject. Therefore, you're entitled to know that that gate has been opened all the way to OT. I have another announcement to make. This is a listing meter. This is a doll. This is a listing meter. This is a prototype, and the manufacturers of this almost made us promise not to show you this. This was just for me to work with, but nevertheless, it tells you what it is. The listing meter. You put it down. And it's got a glass. See the glass? You can look through it. And it's got a needle inside this glass. And that needle bangs and pops back and forth. And gives you all kinds of reads. And you put this down like this. And then you take your piece of paper underneath this and your pencil. And you look through the glass as you write. Pretty good, huh? I invented it with my own little Phaeton. Now, anyway, this good piece of news, a rather fine quality works. This is not as fine at all a meter as, of course, the Mark V, which is a real doll. But this meter, with rather good works in it, better than I thought we could do the thing, is in production and is quite cheap. It's quite cheap because I know you'll be wanting them in co-audits and that sort of thing, running various activities in co-audits. And I know you will want one yourself and so on. So we made the best meter we could, and we're selling it with practically no profit line on it at all. Old Edgar over there just groans at the idea, you see. It doesn't carry any profit with it at all. It's almost a giveaway. I'm going to hand this over to Edgar so that you can look at it after we're through here. And you'll be able to take a closer look at it. But that's kind of interesting. Now, a couple of other things I'd like to say to you. One of them is, because you're doing something about human aberration, or because you're doing something about the mind, people tend to hold you responsible for the mind on an identified basis, don't you see? You get how this is. Because you can do something for the mind, or you know about the mind, then they say that you probably caused it. And they tend to hold you responsible for all of the aberration and the bad weather on Earth, you see? They tend to hold you responsible for everything that's ever gone on in their lives. Everything. Well, actually, it's not true that an individual can't be hurt by life. He sure can be. But it is definitely true. It is definitely true that the major trouble was caused by himself and not by anybody else. And one thing I hate to have happen is for somebody to come up and accuse me of having made this universe this way. Or look at an auditor and sort of accuse him of having fixed them up the way they are. Now, we're willing to take all the responsibility in the world for bailing people out and even take responsibility for aberrating people. You know, you'd have to. Otherwise, that would go on in automaticity. Not that we're going to aberrate anybody. But in order to take aberration factor into account, you had better realize that you didn't do it to him. You see? You didn't do it to him. He did it to himself. You follow that? And you're actually doing him a considerable favor to bail him out. Frankly, there is no greater favor that you could do anybody than to use well good Scientology processing on somebody. There's no greater favor. And I myself got into this because Mary Sue was auditing me with great success, and she hadn't put a goal down on the list yet. And I was still sweating over trying to find her goal. And I had this idea that 200 trillion years from now, she'd still be going on the track, you see. Aberrated, you know, and still trapped in it all. Having cleared me, you see. And having made me an OT, she was still going on because I couldn't find her goal. It was driving me around the bend. The obligation was just too great. Similarly, all of the favors that you have done me and all the friendship you have given me and so on, I appreciate too. We couldn't have done this. We couldn't have done this otherwise. And I don't care how little you've done or how much you've done or how much fuss you've kicked up in the process of doing it. That was all forgiven on the March 13th amnesty, by the way. Did you remember that? I want you to know definitely that I appreciate what you've done. I appreciate the people you've talked to. I appreciate the auditing you've done. Good auditing, bad auditing, it doesn't matter. I appreciate it. You understand? Because I appreciate your trying and your carrying through. Now, there's no greater favor that you could do anybody than to process them. And for your support, I've been trying to give you all the information, make all kinds of training available, make everything available so that you could find your way out, too. We stand in a world which is all too anxious to not is everything that's going on, to rather discount our own importance as an individual, our own importance as a group. We don't realize the force we have as a group, as Scientologists, or the force we have as individuals. We don't realize these things until sometimes we look at the world outside of us. And although I try to protect you, you're delicate, from much of the bad news and things that go on and the battles lost and won, I have a tendency to hold these things close in. There's an awful fuss raised about Scientology. We're not doing anything to anybody. And you never saw such a fuss. Australia. Australia's been throwing stories in the papers. They've had the Attorney General of, I don't know, Attorney General or Corporal or whatever he's. They've gone to fantastic lengths to wipe out Scientology in Australia. Boy, they just had everybody in the fight, see? And the boys down in Melbourne have been holding the front line. That was a pretty hot-firing line recently. And very easily, Scientology could have been wiped out organizationally in Australia. Very easily. And why all this investment of time and trouble? Why are the medical doctors investing tons of money in stopping us? We're not even curing anybody. We're not trying. they're trying to do? Make us so mad we'll start healing people? But why all this investment of government and police power and so forth? Why? Well, we must be more dangerous than we think. That's all I can say to you on the subject. We must be far more dangerous than we think we are. Because when it comes right down to fire on the last shot, they don't dare pull the trigger. And we just received a cable from Melbourne. We'd won, hands down. We'd won the fight. They'd run from the field. And it was all very simple. And some of the Scientologists down there wrote letters in to the Attorney General's office. And a solicitor went down and filed a paper. And they ran like scared pups. Interesting, isn't it? And although we have a fantastic fight going on in the United States over e-meters, we mustn't let these nasty things around. People might tell the truth. And where would government be then? Now, there's that fight going on, and although this is very far from won, there's no source, that's an over, that's ended in Australia. This is very far from won in the States. The government is tentatively suing for peace. They want peace. They say, can't we dream up a label we could put on these meters, which would just forget the whole thing? Please? This is very peculiar. I never fought an action like this. I never fought an action like this before, where the powerful enemy armed with rockets and nuclear warheads peers on the horizon. He's going to crush you, you see. Actually, he's got the power. All he'd have to do is sneeze, practically. And he'd blow all the organizations away. And all of a sudden, he gets scared and runs. Interesting. We can't count on that all the way down the line. We can't count on that happening all the way down the line. But with this much upset in other nations, not England, there is none in England. With this much upset here and there in other nations, what on earth, what's this all about? We must be far more dangerous than we think. And I think we are dangerous, and I got thinking about it the other day, and I told Reg, I said, you know, I said, they're right to attack us. They're just absolutely dead right to attack us this way. They're just absolutely dead right. Look what would happen if we won all the way. Look at what would happen to them. Wouldn't that be terrible? He agreed with me. Yep, they're dead right to attack us. They must be. Must be. They can't be as wrong as they seem to be. And we must be dangerous. Anybody who holds this much truth in the palm of his hand, the truth held indifferently by any student of Scientology is more truth than has been on this planet for an awful long time. And any advanced student is holding more truth in his paws than any great philosopher of ancient Greece. I'm not trying to swell it up, but we know it works. Now move it on forward and take this as a collective organization, I don't think that we would tolerate as many lies as we're told. So they're dead right to attack us, and I suppose we are dangerous, but we don't intend to be. But don't worry about these, because from here on, it's going to be worse. You understand? Because up to this time, there was a lot of hope in our efforts and claims. You understand? And now, the better we teach here, and the better they work at Hazy London, and the better you work in the field, and the better trained we all are, the more acquainted we are, and the more results we deliver, we become a real threat. A real threat. I don't intend to be a threat. I don't intend to be a threat. But look at all the games we spoil at once. Look at the games we spoil. Look at them. Good, valuable games, such as hang all criminals. See? Nothing can be done for anybody, anyplace. Look at the television programs we'd spoil. Look at that. Look at that. You seen these medical programs lately on TV? My children are fascinated with them. Absolutely fascinated with them. They watch them all very carefully. They turn from one channel to the other to watch the operations to laugh. But think of what would happen. Now, we're not trying to do anything bad, but I suppose a forceful good is something this planet is not used to, and we're it. Well, our Congress draws to a close. Our day has been a very wet one, but I hope for you a pleasant one nevertheless. I hope you don't all come down with the sniffles, and if you do, get processed. And I want to thank particularly all of you for coming down here today. I wish I'd have had a better day for you, but as I said, we tried to make it. Always before, I've been trying desperately to make a scintillant state of clear before a Congress. Congress comes up, I say, well, I've got to be clear before this Congress, and everything's got to be fine, and we've got to straighten all this out before this Congress, you see? And Mary Sue always gets mad when I say, you've been clearer longer than anybody. But anyhow, that's beside the point. I made it, see? But this Congress, why, I should have gotten to be OT and handle this weather for you. So I'm here trying to be OT. So that when I do make it, I'm going to have you all down here again. Oh, you didn't believe me. And in the meantime, why, the rhododendrons were late this year. The rhododendrons were all late this year. We had a very rough winter, and a lot of them got frozen. They'll all recover. But usually at this time of year, St. Hill is just one great mass of rhododendron blossoms from one end to the other, and so on. So they aren't out, and you had a very, very rainy day here today. So I'm going to extend to each and every one of you an invitation to drive in and drive around and walk around. As soon as the weather is better and the rhododendrons are out, why, I owe you all a good look at St. Hill in good weather, okay? Well, thank you. Thank you very much for being here. Thanks a lot for coming down. I'm glad to see you. I haven't seen much of you. I've been working too hard. And although you think that might be opposed sometime, why, just look at the number of bulletins you've been getting lately. But I don't see enough of you, and as soon as I get the workload off, I intend to remedy that considerably. So thanks for you being you, and thanks for being down here, and good afternoon.